From the land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fifth day of June 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll talk about the weather across the Corn Belt today with Eric Snodgrass. He's in Nutrien Ag Solutions in Daggable. And if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program with guest Shane Holtorp, Logan Kimmel, and Sherman Newland. If not, it's up online in its entirety right now at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm traveling this afternoon, so Mike Zuzlow is joining me a bit early in the day to talk about the marketplace. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Todd. Thanks for having me back on this lovely Friday afternoon.
We appreciate you being with us early. Mike, of course, is at GlobalComResearch.com. He is out of Atchison, Kansas, and a whole lot closer to an event that is taking place in along the southern border in Texas with the New World Screwworm. And you're a lot closer to a whole bunch of cattle producers as well. I'm wondering how Kansas and Nebraska cattle producers are thinking about the new worm screwworm and its impact on their operations.
Yeah, this is an interesting question you asked, Todd, because I didn't realize you were going to talk about this in this kind of a mindset, but I'm glad you did. I have talked to several since the news broke and the screwworm was confirmed. I think there's actually relief in the rancher mindset right now, because it's been, as they always say, a sword of Damocles hanging over us. When will it happen? It's not a matter of if or when. And this goes to, and I try very often to work things into a general mindset so that the clients and subscribers can keep track of where I'm going. But in both grains and livestock, we've seen a very strong fund-led, investment-led market this year. And in the feeder cattle, it's been very interesting because as we've kept screwworm in Mexico, the thought by the funds, I think, was as long as it stays in Mexico, we won't be able to open the border and allow more feeder cattle into the United States. And, you know, we did 1.2, 1.3 million head a year back 2 years ago in terms of what we brought in live animals. The idea was as soon as it was found in the United States, we would no longer have a reason to hold back from importing those feeders. But since this has gone on so many months, and this story broke back in February, thanks to a great attaché report from USDA, that Mexico has retooled and changed their supply chain so that they are finishing feeder cattle out, and their idea is to go ahead and just export the beef to us. And so I've been sitting here thinking, well, maybe we could have gotten some Mexican feeder cattle across the border, but it sure would have been tough given the constraints with the phytosanitary and sanitary issues that we probably would put in place if we opened it back up. But now do we really have that many cattle left in the feeder category in Mexico? And I think maybe the market is adjusting that. The funds are understanding that this situation is not what it was 6 or 7 months ago. And I think that really is the only thing that helps explain the idea of why we opened so sharply lower for just a couple minutes and then closed limit up on Thursday's trade and continued to go higher on Friday. And I'm almost sure that the weaker corn and grain markets also helped the feeders along as well. But I think this is the interesting dynamic, is that this tightening of supply goes on and it's actually been reinforced. So can we get back to that 381 high from late last year in lead month feeders? And I'm wondering if we can't do that.
So the supply chain, you're saying, of feeder cattle that we thought were stuck at the border actually was changed in Mexico. And rather than being feeder cattle that would be moved across the border into the United States, they just managed to up the ante there, change their supply chain, put slaughter plants in place, and feed those feeder cattle out. And now the whole operation cow-calf to boxed beef is inside of Mexico?
Yeah, and in fact, in the last livestock dairy poultry report in May, USDA obviously keeps track of beef imports coming into the United States. And from Mexico, their exports year over year are up over 30%. And this is, I think, some concrete evidence that they have changed their supply chain and their beef production chain so that they're sending it over as beef instead of live animals. So yeah, to answer your question, I think the numbers are already bearing it out. I think the other thing that I found out that would answer the question, well, what if we do open the border to Mexico? I think that'd be a dangerous thing right now, because an interesting piece of the puzzle is, well, how are the cases of screwworm down in Mexico? Well, they've ballooned this spring. So I don't think we are ready scientifically or from a vet standpoint to take on that kind of a situation, even though we do have ways to manage screwworm. Can we really manage it if it really breaks out in more than one state? So the question really is now, Todd, how does the consumer handle it? And I think that's where the USDA's got to be really on it as far as not allowing this to spread out of Texas. I don't think the consumer will care that much if he sees a story or she sees a story this past week and it dies down. But if we're talking about this 3, 4, 5 weeks from now in the heart of summer grilling season, that's going to impact my analysis.
Yeah, so that would mean consumers decide something different than they have already today about how much beef they want to have on hand, I would think. The consequences of the feeder cattle not coming across and a higher price for feeder cattle and the beef industry in particular, it turns on itself, right? Because it means that you're not keeping heifers back for expansion, and we're already at a lower herd size. So if we were to play this out and consumers don't change their attitudes and the screwworm is kept in place, but we still have high demand for beef, does it keep the expansion from coming?
No, I don't think it keeps the expansion from coming. That's one thing ranchers have confirmed, that USDA's cattle on feed report was probably very accurate with the increase in placements in Colorado and Texas and Kansas. And this is where the drought came in and really hurt us. But if it starts to rain again, which it has in some key dry areas, and that rain continues, I think we'll go back to a retention phase. I think the answer is kind of similar to what we dealt with in 2014, 2015. The ultimate high in the market back then was a drop in consumption. And so it's really, in my opinion, up to the import-export numbers. Can we get enough beef to saturate the supply from other countries? I don't think we can do that in the next 6 months. And then the next question is, if we don't change consumer habits, does Wall Street have a big drop? I think that's the most likely scenario that could hurt us as far as price.
Okay, I only left you a minute and a half to cover corn, soybeans, and wheat. Big drop yesterday, not so much today.
No, and I think this is still in my mind, because of the wheat and because of the crude and them still being leaders, this still to me is a correction, not a top, because the trade and the funds are playing this very much like last year at this time for a variety of reasons. The fundamentals are just not like last year at this time.
What are you telling producers after the drop this week then?
I'm actually going to be looking at buying feed needs for the corn the rest of the calendar year, and I'm going to do a webinar this afternoon for clients and talk specifically about looking at diesel needs being locked in for fall, because I do think this situation in the Strait of Hormuz, as we get deeper into June, we start drawing down on inventories that we'll no longer have in terms of excess inventory. So I'm very nervous about the rest of this year in diesel.
Oh, yeah. So I was thinking about that. That was kind of my next question, just a couple of more words here. If the Strait of Hormuz doesn't open up, does it have an impact on demand worldwide? Is there demand destruction because the price of energy to ship commodities across the planet?
I don't think so. And the head of Vitol was at an energy conference this week and said at $90 WTI, we're not rationing demand. And there's been several big, big energy people that have come out and said, we need to ration demand because we're still losing about 14% of global output with that strait being closed. Nothing is going to be able to substitute that except demand destruction.
Thank you much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention on this Friday, as we always do, to Eric Snodgrass and the forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Hello, Eric. Thank you for being with us. What a beautiful week it has been in our part of the world. You always, as meteorologists, get the bad end of it and the blame. I'm going to give you kudos for this week. It was a good one.
Thank you, Todd. It was a nice week. Temperatures were good. We had, you know, we got some heat on the crop, which was needed. In fact, I went driving around a little bit, and then even last weekend driving over to Springfield, I mean, the crop is jumping out of the ground, which is what we want to see. We'd like to get some heat units back into this, because we were technically, since the start of May, in a bit of a deficit. So heat's not bad, and the heat's going to continue through this weekend into early next week as well. So I got some halfway decent temperatures coming through. It's just a question about precipitation.
I went west to the middle of Kansas, well, Junction City, earlier in the week. And as I've told others, it hurt just a little to see such a good crop west of the Mississippi and the big rain that they had there, which brings me to the state of Illinois. Yeah. There are places here that are just really dry and getting drier.
Yeah, you know, my neighbor Trent Ford earlier this week put in some recommendations for some degradation and drought across the northern half of the state. Honestly, the dividing line is if you look back over the last, I don't know, 20 to 30 days, the dividing line is Interstate 72. So south of it, there's been some decent moisture. To the north of it, bone dry, absolutely bone dry. So that's why we're so excited to be seeing storms come out of Iowa and northern Illinois this morning, seeing our chances of rainfall improving over the next several days. So we could get some decent chances of moisture coming through just this weekend. And then next week, I think we've got even more improved chances of picking up maybe another inch in total of precipitation. And that inch would be critical as we go through this point in June. But more importantly, Todd, it's much more critical just to keep the soil moisture values higher. And here's the reason why. If you want me to start thinking about July and the risk of heat in July, we got two big predictors. And the first is our soil moisture from the Midwest all the way down on the western side of the Mississippi Valley. If the soil moisture values are low there as we go through the end of June, the risk of July heat goes up. And here's the reason why. If you have moisture in the soil and you beat on it with the sun, well, about half of the energy from the sun goes into evaporating the water, which is actually a cooling process, only leaving about 50% of the solar energy to heat the ground. If you have no soil moisture, then it just gets all of it and it gets hot. And so the rains coming up throughout this big, broad section of the central United States over the next 7 to 10 days will be critical to determining maybe what July's temperature pattern is going to be like. So yes, we got to talk a lot about rain right now and its importance in predicting the upcoming summer.
Okay, so important things, two items there, right? Soil moisture and where that soil moisture is in the Delta region. Is that correct?
So you were listening, Todd.
Yeah.
Soil moisture in the Delta is part number one. Part number two has to do with ocean temperatures. They are often a clue as to what the overall jet stream wants to do. So bullet point number two is watch the Gulf of Alaska, watch the west coast of North America's ocean temperatures. And in a nutshell, if it gets colder there over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be increasing our risk of heat in the Midwest. So cold off the west coast increases our risk of heat here. So you're asking, well, what's it doing now? Well, it's not. I mean, there's some cooler water there, but it's not expansive enough for there to be a problem. And most of the models show that by the time we get to about June 16th, 17th, there is going to be a sizable western U.S. ridge, which would be where the heat will be located. So long story short, those factors, the fact that it's going to rain, we think, throughout the Mississippi Valley, and then we're going to be seeing a big ridge set up west, and the ocean temperatures aren't cold yet, all of that points toward what I would call a more favorable look in terms of our temperature and moisture pattern going into this critical time period of pollination. So that's what I know, Todd.
Now, before we come back to the near-term forecast,
sure,
what the rainfall might look like over the next week or 2 weeks and climate in and across the Corn Belt, I do want to return to the drought in the northern half of Illinois, yeah, because I feel like northern Illinois has gone a really long time without rainfall. What's happening in that part of our Corn Belt?
Oh yeah, there are places that have gone, 21 days without a drop of rain. So it's good to see storms trying to get through that area this morning. Then the other part of it is they're off between 3 and 4 inches on the last 30 days. So they're behind about 3 to 4 inches of rainfall. So anything that can come through that area is going to be key. I'd say the only saving grace is, Todd, it didn't get extremely hot during that time frame. Yes, we saw temps in the 80s, but you didn't kind of give it the double whammy effect of hot and very, very dry. So I think there's still time for that crop, especially since it's in its vegetative stages right now. And this is an okay time of year to give it a little bit of drought stress and a little bit of heat as long as it rains soon.
Is that sort of the four corners, roughly, if we could call it that, of Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa? How big is the area?
It's pretty big. It's not just that region, but it extended across more of Iowa until the rain that just came through in the last 36 hours was there. And then it was a lot of Wisconsin, but they're getting storms now. And it even extends over into northern Indiana and southern Michigan as well. I was talking to a guy in southern Michigan. He's like, "Man, it's been beautiful weather, but I imagine the farmers want some rain." I'm like, "Yes, they desperately do." So it's a bigger area than just that small corner of Illinois and Iowa.
They always want rain, sunshine, cooler temperatures, warmer temperatures.
That's right. And I get it.
Something could be a little better
That's
always.
right.
Speaking of that, what is our near-term forecast look like?
Yeah, so like I said, we've got chances of storms today and through parts of the weekend, and then there are additional chances of rain coming in next week. So I've got multiple shots at us getting some meaningful rainfall back into this area. We will see temperatures climbing, though, a bit ahead of this. And not necessarily today, but temperatures, especially throughout the rest of the Midwest, could be quite warm going forward. But the longer I look out there, Todd, the middle of the month, the less extreme heat I see by the time we get to like the 13th, 14th, all the way through the 17th and 18th.
Anything new on the long-term outlook?
There is, and it's a bit of a head scratcher this morning. So about 6 a.m. this morning, we got the new European seasonal forecast. And the part that I completely agree with is this prediction for El Niño, which once again has even strengthened. It has now better than 50% of its forecast ensemble members predicting an historic El Niño. All of them are predicting a super El Niño. We call that above 2.5 degrees Celsius. Now, the head scratcher is it just went over really dry for the Corn Belt. July, September, July, August, September. And all of us are going, "Well, wait a second. History would not support that. That's not what we would typically expect to have happen given everything we just talked about." And I went back and looked, and sure enough, last year on June 1st, when the long range model was run for July, August, and September of 2025, it predicted a huge Western Corn Belt drought with the epicenter in Iowa. Now, Todd, do you remember? I'm putting you on the spot. Do you remember what happened in Iowa last July?
Not off the top of my head, no.
That's right, because you weren't there to endure it. It was one of the wettest Julys on record. So in June, the model predicted epic drought in the month of July and August in Iowa, and then it came in near record wet, in some places record wet. We had all that fungus problem, right, with the tar spot and
Oh,
the
yes.
yeah, remember
Yeah.
all that?
I'm sorry. Yeah, southern rust.
Yeah, oh, southern rust. That's right.
Yes, thank you. Now I yes, I seriously recall now.
So what I'm trying to tell everybody is this new model run just came out today, and it may throw things into a tizzy, but I would not throw that model or take its forecast any further than I can throw it. And as I told you before, it takes up an entire office floor of a building with computers, so I can't throw it very far.
Well, we'll check and see if it changes sometime in the future. I don't know when the next one comes out.
Next month.
Oh, okay. So next month we'll check in. And in the meantime, we'll check with you again next week. Thanks much.
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
You're so welcome. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, where? At willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.